The following program, Normal Show Live, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate for the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate or encourage any illegal activity and advise all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws by visiting normal.org, N-O-R-M-L.org. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers of Normal Show Live are their own and do not necessarily reflect the philosophy and policies of Normal. Listener discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization.
And I think we need to rethink and decriminalize our marijuana laws.
To the agony of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws presents...
We love the earth.
Normal Show Live, Marijuana Nation. Now, here's your host, Normal's Outreach Coordinator, Radical Russ Belville.
Good afternoon. It is Friday, February 26, 2010, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, joining you for 60 minutes of live news, talk, interviews, conversation, music, comedy, and more by, for, and about the cannabis community. And joining us on this fabulous weekend day, my good friend and half-half sister from Astoria, Oregon, Cannabis Carrie.
Happy Friday, Radical Russ. Happy Friday.
Oh, I'm having a happy Friday myself. Even though it is pouring buckets out here in Potland, Oregon, we are full on into winter in the Pacific Northwest. How are you doing up there, Carrie?
I'm doing pretty good, and I love our East Coast listeners, so I don't want to brag too much, but just reminding you, we don't have to shovel the rain. It goes away by itself.
That's right. How are things looking up there for your weekend? Any big plans?
Just a little organizing, that's all, you know.
Getting things
weekend
together.
Weekend stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Well, this weekend I will be up at the Oregon Normal Cardholders meeting. This is at the 700 Northeast Deakum, the Village Ballroom. I'm going to be streaming it here on Normal Show Live, so check out this Stick'em stream, noon Pacific tomorrow, and you can see how a meeting goes in the largest Normal chapter in the galaxy, Oregon Normal, right here in Portland. Now, Cannabis
Carrie. Yeah, Russ, that was great. I wanted to say last time I did catch that on the screen and really encourage anyone else just to check in to see what that's like. I was shocked, and it really makes you feel proud to be an activist to see that going on.
Yeah, and a lot of people, you know, that are starting new Normal chapters, they just don't know what to do, right? You know, well, we got a chapter, now what do we do? Well, this will give you some good ideas, and even if you're not in a medical marijuana state like Oregon Normal is, it still shows you how you can do the talks and the documentation and the letter writing campaigns and all of that. So check it out, and check it out on the web at ornorml.org. Now, Cannabis Carrie brings us our news right after our first break, so what are we looking forward to today?
Well, we're going to just check in with the L.A. dispensary scene down there and let you all know what's going on as of now. We're going to go to Denver, where the clock is ticking down on some of the dispensaries there. And my favorite segment of the week, the one-hitter hemp headlines. We're going to do an update for you. We're going to have a story about an actress, some real estate, and a mystery. You'll have to hang on after the break to hear what that's all about.
All right, we'll check that out with Cannabis Carrie right after this next break. And also on today's show, it is our Cultivator's Corner with Danny Danko from High Times, the senior cultivation editor. He'll be joining us here live at the bottom of the hour, taking your questions through our live chat window on stickem.com. Danny will answer all your cultivation questions here as we approach springtime. It'll be a good time to get your questions in. And at the end of the show, I'm going to take a look at the Mexican drug war. We continue to get some just horrendous reports out of the border cities in northern Mexico. Most recently, this one closed down a U.S. consulate over gunfire in the streets. We'll tell you more about that at the bottom of the hour. This is Normal Show Live. We're right back after this.
You're listening to Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
So
Hello, I'm Paul Stanford from the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation, or THCF. Medical marijuana is legal in 13 states today, and THCF has clinics in 8 of those states. Our doctors help qualified patients obtain an authorization for medical marijuana in their state. Patients are eligible for medical marijuana with a history of either severe chronic pain and or nausea, cancer, AIDS or HIV, hepatitis, glaucoma, seizure disorders like epilepsy, chronic muscle spasms such as in multiple sclerosis or asthma, neurodegenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's, and gastrointestinal disorders like IBS or Crohn's disease. If you or someone you know has one of these conditions, our doctors will help you obtain a permit for medical marijuana. THCF Medical Clinics has offices in Washington State, Oregon, California, Colorado, Hawaii, Nevada, Montana, and now Michigan. Call 1-800-723-0188 or go to the web at hemp.org or 1-800-723-0188.
It's a kite, everybody.
This drug in front of me is what they call marijuana.
If we had a dime for every dime bag bought in America, marijuana would be legal by now. Donate to Normal at NORML.org and support Normal Show Live. Medical marijuana, industrial hemp, consumer cannabis. It's time for this week's Normal News with Cannabis Carry.
The medical marijuana dispensary raids that occurred last week are setting the stage for a legal showdown that pits medical marijuana advocates against L.A. City Attorney Carmen Trutanich and District Attorney Steve Cooley. The city prosecutor's office filed 3 lawsuits last week seeking court injunctions to force a popular Venice, California dispensary and 2 holistic caregiver stores to stop all sales. Trutanich maintains that the state law authorizes collectives only to grow marijuana and recover their actual costs, not to sell it. Americans for Safe Access has joined in the legal battle this week by saying that the advocacy group would join the lawsuits unless the city withdraws them. While voters passed the state's medical marijuana initiative in 1996, the courts still have not ruled directly on whether collectives can sell marijuana to its members. William Carter, the chief deputy city attorney, told the LA Times that the city is confident in their legal position and has no intention of withdrawing the lawsuits. Cooley's office has filed felony charges against dispensary operators, saying their sales violate state laws. On Monday, prosecutors charged Jeff Joseph, the operator of the popular collective Organica, with 24 felonies. The city taking a preemptive action against the collective before the city's medical marijuana ordinance takes effect shows just how divided the issue is among lawmakers. After much pressure by Cooley and Trutanich on city council members, the council adopted tight restrictions, but they would not explicitly ban sales, the one weapon that the city attorney's office was hoping to add to their arsenal.
Well, you know, it's all about the money, 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 money here when we start talking about the dispensary situation in Los Angeles. And this idea from the from Trutanich and Cooley saying that Prop 215 only authorizes the recouping of expenses and utilities is very, very controversial and, in my opinion, wrong. Of course, I'm no lawyer, but this does not seem at all what the people of California passed during Prop 215. And it appears that the patients that are using the dispensary systems seem to like them just fine. This is just another opportunity for the city government that has time and a time again shown that they do not support Prop 215. They do not support medical marijuana. It's just another opportunity for them to find a way to come down on the dispensaries. They're already proposing dispensary regulations, these zoning codes that would pretty much zone the dispensaries out of existence. They're setting it up so they have to be 1,000 feet away from a school or a playground or a park or a church or a human being or oxygen or cement, right? You have to be 1,000 feet away from everything. Pretty much the only place they'll be able to set up dispensaries is somewhere out there in the Pacific Ocean, the way that these regulations are being drafted. We'll keep a close eye on this to make sure that we get you all the news there from California, but it's not looking good right now for the folks in Southern California.
And the new guidelines for Denver medical marijuana dispensaries that was passed by the city council last month is taking effect this Monday, March 1st. This means that the clock is ticking for existing dispensaries to get in compliance with the new regulation. Medical marijuana dispensary operators who have not yet applied for Denver's new dispensary license must do so by today to avoid having to suspend operations while the license application is under review. Beginning on Monday, everyone who operates or plans to operate a medical marijuana dispensary must be licensed. Now, some of the new rules, no one under 18 is allowed on the premises. Products cannot be visible from the outside. Anyone who has a felony conviction in the last 5 years cannot even be a partial owner. All facilities must have a written operating plan that includes floor plans, security details, and 24-hour surveillance of the property. And applications must be circulated and must comply with the Department of Community Planning and Development, Department of Finance, Department of Environmental Health, the Police Department, and the Denver Fire Department. There will be no more consumption of cannabis, either smoked or eaten, on premises. And, of course, fees of $5,000 must be included with the application. Now, the excise and license office was bracing for a landslide of applications to process since there are 485 sales tax licenses that have been issued to dispensaries in Denver. But as of Wednesday, less than 100 had turned in their new applications. Dispensaries can still turn in their applications after March 1st, but they will need to cease operations until they have their shiny new licenses.
Oh, my goodness.
But isn't marijuana or dope illegal?
Only for those who enjoy it. Medical use of marijuana is legal in this state.
That's right. It's legal in the state of Colorado, not only by law, but under the Constitution. It's a constitutional amendment. And once again, we have city officials that have, not been on the ball with regard to coming up with some sort of regulations to deal with these dispensaries. And so after the fact, after there's hundreds of them established, now they want to come around and start shutting a bunch of them down. And some of these restrictions, like not being able to consume cannabis on the premises, well, that's going to take care of places like the Ganja Gourmet, the upscale restaurant that opened up there to serve patients with medibles and other items. And of course, the dispensary system itself in Colorado is under attack here with this idea that they have to do a $5,000 fee to register as a dispensary. You know, the state here is making so much money off of these medical marijuana dispensaries. There's 81 of these dispensaries so far that have turned in their $5,000 fee. So 81 times $5,000, that's $405,000 for the city of Denver. Now, if all 480, let's just call it 500. If all 500 of them were in compliance, if they all paid that $5,000 fee, that's $2.5 million for the city of Denver. So, looks like someone in City Hall finally figured out that there's gold in them thar buds. Now, also keep in mind that this $5,000 for the dispensary fee, that's on top of every other fee that these dispensaries have to file, as any other business would in Denver, and on top of the sales taxes that they're bringing in for the city of Denver, on top of Colorado's already state sales tax, Denver itself has 4.64% in sales taxes for itself, its mass transit system, the museums, the science stuff, and the football stadium where the Denver Broncos play. So, it looks to me as if medical marijuana is contributing to our society as much or more than most businesses, and yet it is being restricted unlike any other business in the city of Denver. The people that own liquor stores or open up convenience stores that sell beer, they don't have to go through these onerous types of restrictions other than getting a liquor license, which tends to be even more expensive, but they don't have the restrictions of the 1,000 feet away from everything and all these terrible things that they're trying to do to these medical marijuana dispensaries. We hope that the folks in Denver can fight back against this, because this is obviously an attack on their rights, and it's just going to make things tougher on the patients if they're unable to go to the dispensaries that they're used to going to.
And in my favorite segment of the week, here's our hemp headline one hitters. A mansion for sale on 4 acres in Middleton, Wisconsin wasn't getting any buyers, so the homeowner decided to change his listing to include the description of his wine room as a spectacular room to grow marijuana. Owner Jerry Hellenbrand said he isn't a marijuana consumer, but that the room has excellent gardening potential. Well, the listing got picked up by the Jay Leno show in one of his comedy bits, but so far it hasn't helped sell the $675,000 home.
Oh, wow. $675,000, it's got a perfect grow room. I'm sure that's going to get picked up really quickly. On to our next one hitter.
Actress Natalie Portman is producing and starring in a stoner comedy titled Best Buds, according to her production company, Handsome Charlie Films. The movie is about a runaway bride, played by Portman, and is your general stoner road trip flick. The twist here, of course, is unlike every other stoner road trip comedy ever made, this one is starring women.
Oh, good. We're glad to hear that. We want to have more portrayals, positive portrayals of women, because it's really interesting when you think about it. And I don't know if you've thought about this, Carrie, but when you think of, like, stoner icons, there's a certain number of one-name icons. You could just say Cheech, Chong. You could say Woody, Willie. People will Snoop, right? People will immediately think marijuana. But can you really think of a woman who's the same way, like a single-name female?
Well, Drew Barrymore a little bit, but she's not really out and about. But seriously, all of us stoner girls, she's our idol.
All right. That's good to hear. Let's go on for another one-hitter.
In Louisville, Kentucky, on Monday, a truckload of confiscated marijuana that could be worth more than $1 million just disappeared somewhere between Memphis and Louisville. The more than 1,700 pounds of pot went missing during a controlled drug delivery going from Memphis to Louisville, reportedly for destruction after the cannabis was confiscated from a semi-truck on February 10th.
1,700 pounds of marijuana has gone missing? Well, you know, it had to be an accident, right? Because, you know, the cops, they wouldn't have set up a controlled buy and then just seen that marijuana disappear for any other sort of nefarious purposes. No, there must be something else to blame there. One more one-hitter?
Space alien.
Yeah,
space
alien.
Yeah, just an update for you. Denver man Chris Barkowitz, whose home was raided last week after he went on a news program and showed off his beautiful garden of over 200 plants, is working with lawyers to fight his case. Meanwhile, the luscious plants that were seized, according to DEA spokesman Mike Turner, will be destroyed by incineration, probably this weekend. If local police have confiscated the medical marijuana, they are required by the courts to take care of the plants until the courts actually rule that the cannabis is not medical. The DEA does not have to play by those same rules. In local court cases, the plants are considered genuine business assets until a court rules otherwise.
Oh, my goodness. So this was once again prime proof of the maxim, loose lips cause rips. Don't be growing. Don't be bragging about your home grow, especially on TV, and get yourself raided. That's a shame. All right, thank you, Cannabis Carrie, for all of the news. We'll be back with you real soon here. We've got just a little bit of time here. We can catch up with what's happening on our cannabis community calendar.
It only comes twice a day, but I don't care. It's 420 somewhere.
All right, it's time for Normal's Cannabis Community Calendar, which you can check out yourself at normal.org/calendar. Tonight, on Friday, February 26th, Pittsburgh Normal is having a fundraiser in support of House Bill 1393. For more information, check out pittsburghnormal.org or shadowlounge.net. Tomorrow, Saturday, February 27th, there is a THC tour, also known as the Talking Hemp and Cannabis Tour. Looks like this will be taking place in Wisconsin. And for more information, you can contact Jay Selthoffner at immlyinthefield@yahoo.com or call 920-410-4100. 2920. Also tomorrow, Oregon Normal will be holding their cardholders meeting at the Village Ballroom, 700 Northeast Deakin in Potland, Oregon. I will be streaming live at live.normal.org so you can catch it. And if you'd like to get more information, check out ornorml.org. And finally, tomorrow on Saturday as well, Kansas City Normal is holding their public meeting at 4010 Pennsylvania Avenue in Kansas City, Missouri. For more information, check out kcnormal.org or call 888-KC-NORMAL. All that sound means it's time for a special break. As we get ready for the weekend, it's 20 after. We hope all of you out there on the East Coast and everywhere else enjoy the break. We'll be right back after these break messages.
It's 20 after the hour, and we have to take a short break, if you know what I mean. Please support these sponsors who support Normal Show Live.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. Have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. If he said he swam to China, he would send you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
Law420.com.
Hello, I'm Russ Belville, Outreach Coordinator for Normal. In my job, I read literally hundreds of headlines each month involving nonviolent, productive citizens whose lives are ripped apart by a marijuana or drug arrest. Many citizens could avoid arrest by refusing police searches and remaining silent, but police are well-trained to confuse and intimidate. That's why you have a right to speak to an attorney before answering any police questions. I hope you never need to exercise that right, but if you do, make your first call to the law offices of John C. Lucy IV. John Lucy is an accomplished criminal defense attorney with expertise in Oregon's medical marijuana law. John Lucy understands and respects cannabis and drug consumers of all backgrounds. Call John C. Lucy IV at 503-227-6000 or visit in downtown Portland. Address available at law420.com. That's John C. Lucy IV at 503-227-6000 or visit law420.com today.
Almost busted in Laredo, but for reasons that I'd rather not disclose.
I smoke pot, and I like it a lot. Hi, this is Willie Nelson. I learned a long time ago that marijuana is a lot safer to use than alcohol. There's absolutely nothing wrong with the responsible use of marijuana by adults. It's time we stopped arresting and started respecting responsible marijuana smokers in America. And to learn what you can do to help, please contact Normal at www.normal.org or call toll-free at 888-67-NORMAL.
The show was long and we were just sitting there, and we'd come to play and not just for the ride.
It's time for your Daily Toker Tunes, the best in 420-friendly music from all genres that uplifts, entertains, and informs the public. Our PodSafe music is donated by freedom-loving musicians who support our goal of ending adult marijuana prohibition. Today we take you into the weekend with Rockin' Friday, our segment featuring the best rock, metal, punk, and jam band music, brought to you by The Bastard, blogging at jerseyandohio.wordpress.com. If you'd like to submit your song to be played on Normal Show Live, send it to us at stash@normal.org. Now, here's some great independent marijuana music for today's Daily Toker Tune. Well, we're still working out the position for Friday Music Editor. The Bastard is no longer with us, and I've got two or three people that have been applying to take over as the volunteer music editor for Rockin' Friday. If you're interested in supplying tunes, they do need to be pod safe, and that just means that they're not commercial tunes, they're not registered with ASCAP or BMI, and we can have permission to play them and archive them on our podcast. If you're interested, just send me an email to stash@normal.org. This next one comes from an applicant who goes by the name of Eric. I don't have a pseudonym for him yet, so I'll just use his first name, Eric. And today's Toker Tune is from the Pencil Decks, based out of El Sobrante, California. This band is influenced by many artists, from Tom Waits to the Beatles to Boxcar Willie. As Craig Pinto describes the band on their website,
pencilnecks.com, quote, "It's difficult to figure out exactly when the Pencilnecks became a band. Certainly, it was long after they had ceased to be a street gang, but long before they became a gracious retirement community. There are those who say the Pencilnecks are a state of mind floating outside of the temporal limits of normal human experience, but since those people have been taking their medications on a slightly more regular basis, they haven't been saying that quite so often," end quote. Unfortunately, though all things must come to an end, and so did this band, apparently those strains of alcohol abuse were too much and they parted ways, but not before they recorded Marijuana. It's a swingin' tune reminiscent of the likes of Big Bad Voodoo Daddy and the Cherry Poppin' Daddies. What's with all the daddies? And with a few grams of cannabis thrown in. If you're looking for more info on the band, go to pencilnecks.com, and you can find more on garageband.com. And registered stashers, if you go out to stash.normal.org and register your account, you'll be able to get a download of this tune. It's the Pencilnecks with their song, Marijuana.
San Diego, back in 1826, the Indians were loading bales of cotton from the ships. A priest stood on the deck, lost in his private little hell, but his thoughts were interrupted when he smelled the funny smell.
Marijuana,
caught up in the act.
Marijuana,
40 lashes to their back.
Marijuana,
quite a mild tear. Sailor has his rum. It's San Jose, it's PCP. In China, opium. No thanks, no Pinot Blanc. No Curacao and a set. No coke, no crank, no cognac. But I'll have a cigarette.
Marijuana.
Simply can't your mind.
Marijuana.
Smoke and ye shall find.
The problem is, I need some more, and just like Logan, I've got to have a strange disease with balls of red and dead eyes and some shit between my knees. My head will smoke up brown eyes, I can't remember when. Tell me I'm not dead.
Hi, I'm Keith Straub, the founder of Normal. In all the years since 1970 that I've been fighting marijuana prohibition, I've learned that drug warriors love to confuse the public with statistics. Lately, they've claimed that there are more teens enrolled in drug treatment for marijuana than ever before. It's a statement that, while true, is intentionally misleading. What they don't tell you is that marijuana arrests have skyrocketed to over 800,000 arrests per year. They also don't tell you that we've gone from a few dozen drug courts in the 1990s to over 2,500 drug courts today. The kicker is that those drug courts sentence teens routinely to drug treatment for marijuana, whether they need drug treatment or not. So they arrest more people for pot, require them to enter drug treatment, then claim the higher treatment numbers justify more pot arrests. It's an absurd proposition, but no more absurd than banning a plant. Learn the facts about pot. Visit norml.org today.
Starfish Designs, makers of the original Gandalf.
I'm Radical Russ, and when I want to relax, I always have my 17-inch long original Gandalf from Starfish Designs nearby. The hand-blown borosilicate glass is strong and easy to clean, and the design is sleek and sophisticated. Starfish Designs are available from Bend, Oregon at a glass retailer near you. For locations, call 541-788-GLASS. That's 541-788-4527.
Mary, quite contrary. How does her garden grow? Don't ask me. I'm just the voiceover guy. Ask High Times Senior Cultivation Editor Danny Danko in our Normal Show Live's Cultivator's Corner.
I want to tell you all a little bit about a plant I know that can save the world. It grows long and tall and has flowers that can make your mind swirl.
All right, welcome back, everyone. It's 32 after the hour, and we're getting ready for our Cultivator's Corner with Danny Danko, High Times Senior Cultivation Editor. We're having a little bit of difficulty getting him on the line, though, as the High Times office seems to be closed, and we need to enter an extension to get to Danny's phone. And we're having trouble getting the extension entered because this is all through Skype, and Carrie's trying to find out the little button in Skype that allows us to dial extensions. But in the meantime, while we're waiting, I will go over a story that I've got sitting here on the blog that I thought would be quite interesting, kind of follows along these lines, not about cultivation, but this is about that new spice that everyone's talking about, the K2 or the synthetic marijuana that people have been buying up. We've been telling this story in Kansas most recently. There's been a lot of folks in Kansas the legislature of Kansas has just recently banned this K2. And what it is it's been being sold as an incense. They call it the K2 incense. But of course, everyone is using it to smoke. Its active ingredient, at least in most of these, are the JWH 018. This is a synthetic cannabinoid that has been used in clinical testing on various lab animals and such. But it binds to our body's own cannabinoid receptors and does give you a high, much like smoking cannabis. I've been told here that the high is less long lasting than the cannabinoid high, than the THC high, I should say, but that the JWH does give you somewhat of a high. Now, Philly Normal has been reporting on this, and you can check out their reports at phillynormal.org. They've got a big, long list here. And what they found out is, in talking to various experts on this, that the synthetic cannabinoid JWH-018 does seem to work, and the best news about it, if you smoke these synthetics, would you pass a standard workplace drug screen? It looks like yes, because the workplace drug screen is built to catch the THC metabolite, not a JWH-018 metabolite. And an even better news, for these drug testing industries to add a test for JWH-018 would be very prohibitively expensive. So through chemistry, it looks like we're going to be beating these drug tests, because it looks like every time they come up with a new test, we'll just come up with a new cannabinoid in order to beat that test. So good on you, all you chemistry folks out there, and great news from Philly Normal checking that out. All right, now on our telephone, joining us here from New York City, is our good friend and the High Times Senior Cultivation Editor, Danny Danko. Danny, welcome back to the show.
Hey, thank you, Russ.
Hey, sorry about the trouble trying to get you on the line, but we're glad we have you here. A lot of folks here are going to be asking their questions here in the chat room, and Carrie is going to cut and paste them for us so that we can get the information and the questions out to you. Let's start with this first question from, before we get to the questions, though, Danny, how you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing good. I mean, we got a big snowstorm here in New York. It's pretty fun, you know, just, huddling down for the snow. And, you know, we've got our Cannabis Cup issue out right now, April 2010 issue, covering our Cannabis Cup event that was this past November in Amsterdam.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's definitely something we're excited about. That's out now. We've got that medical marijuana guide that's out now for people in states with medical marijuana.
Right, the new medical marijuana magazine.
The New York bill is progressing as well. We're working on getting the medical marijuana bill passed in New York as well. Our government's a little dysfunctional, but we've got some pretty serious people, pushing for that right now to get that through our legislature. So, you know, things are looking good for us, and things are looking great in California and Colorado. I mean, there's the raids and there's a few rogue agents here and there, but we're winning this battle. So
yeah,
it's pretty exciting times, and it's exciting here at all times. I mean, launching a new mag and we're also throwing a Cannabis Cup of sorts in June in California. So
yeah, that's something that folks wanted me to ask you about for sure, Danny, was this. They've been hearing the rumors of the High Times Medical Cannabis Cup to be taking place here on the West Coast. Can you tell us more about the times, the dates, how people can get involved?
Yeah, well, there's information at hightimes.com/medcancup. And basically, the event is June 19th and 20th. The cup part, I mean, basically, it's for medical patients, so, you know, you got to have your card there and everything. Myself and Jorge Cervantes and colleague Nico Escondido are going to be doing growth seminars. There's a full expo. There's activism stuff going on, all the leading dispensaries, medical cultivation seminars. Big VIP party. We've got Mixmaster Mike and Lyrics Born and Eagles of Death Metal. So, you know, we're basically just going to be celebrating some victories and, really trying to determine who's got the highest quality medical marijuana out there. And it's in the Bay Area. It's in San Francisco. Anyone wants any more information, just check it out online. We've got links on our website for that. We've got links also for the new medical magazine, which you can buy. And that is hightimes.com/medmj, just M-E-D-M-J. So that's basically what we're working on. We're, you know, firing on all cylinders.
Yeah.
Our industry is growing in a recession, which is just pretty incredible.
No kidding. And it's amazing. Of course, this is for medical cannabis, but we're looking forward to the day when medical cannabis is, or just cannabis in general, is available to all adults from coast to coast. And when it does, I'm really hoping that the High Times American Cup, I really hope it ends up kind of like being the March Madness, you know? We got to have four regional brackets, you know, West, East, Midwest, and South.
Absolutely. The Pacific Northwest. I think California, you could probably divide into two or three brackets on its own.
Yeah, it really could.
You know, you've got your NorCal stuff and your Southern Cali. And, you know, it would be very interesting if we could, you know, one day we will definitely have that type of a seating system, you know.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's get to the questions here. They're just piling up here in the chat room. First question from an Illinois listener, I believe, ILSB1381, wants to know, it says, I'd like Danny to talk about flushing in a hydroponic system. What makes a good flushing solution and what your flushed water should tell you? I guess, you know, reading the flushed water for, you know, what it might be telling you.
Yeah, this is an important thing that a lot of hydroponic growers sort of don't know too much about. And whether your plants are in the soilless mix or soil mix, or in a hydroponic medium, you really need to do the flushing to get the highest quality product. What flushing consists of basically is using plain water or what he was mentioning, like a solution that basically you pump through your system for the last week and a half. Even some people will flush for 2 weeks in a hydro system. When you do that, you know, you're just basically trying to leach out a lot of the minerals and salts that have accumulated over the course of the plant's life. So the plant builds up all this, stuff inside, And at that point, when you're getting ready to consume it, you want as little of that in there as possible. So, you know, the plants at the end of their life, right before you trim them, they should really be, the leaves should be starting to be yellow, you know, the fan leaves and stuff, because that really indicates that their plant is losing nitrogen, and that shows you that the flushing process is working. As far as solutions, there's a lot of different solutions on the market. I can't really endorse one or the other, but most people really just stick with like plain water. Really, you know, they start to go a little milder towards the end, maybe sixth or seventh week of flowering. They'll start to go milder on a lot of the nutrients. It's kind of like a pre-flush. And then at the end, you know, you just use the plain water. As far as testing it, if you're still finding parts per million higher than 400 or 500 in the water that's coming out after you flush your plants, then that's an indicator that you just need to continue flushing.
Okay, so the thing to watch in the flushed water is the parts per million,
right,
of, and we're just waiting for that to go down to zero.
Right, and the benefit of all that is just cleaner burning or vaporizing marijuana. You know, it just takes it from you know, decent quality to excellent quality when you remove a lot of those salts and metals and stuff from the, you know, the cells of the product.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Another question here comes from our 20 Freedom Fighter. Says yesterday he heard someone say they're getting 2,000 grams every 30 days, 2,000 grams, 2 kilograms every 30 days, using a 4x4 tent, 400 HPS, and a 250 LED. Let's see, I'm sorry, 200 metal halide. I'm sorry, let me start this over. He's getting 2 keys every month using a 4x4 tent, 400 watt metal halide, 400 watt high pressure sodium, and 250 watt LED. There we go. Does that sound accurate to you, that you could get that much out of that kind of setup?
That sounds like somewhat of an exaggeration to me. I mean, the first tip-off is getting it all in 1 month from one room, because the flowering time of a plant is typically about 2 months, you know, about 8 weeks, basically, 50 to 65 days of most strains. So I really, you know, there's also the vegging time built into that. Unless you have a perpetual harvest, which requires several different, you know, areas of growth, and I just can't see that happening every month. Now, if he's talking about every, you know, 80 days or so with the, you know, vegging time included, it still somewhat seems like an exaggeration. I mean, 2,000 grams from 400 watts and with the LED addition, I mean, a gram per watt is a pretty lofty goal for most growers indoors. And you're talking like 4 grams per watt, or three or four. It sounds like a little bit of an exaggeration.
Well, that's a good rule of thumb to know.
You can't get plenty of bud out of that situation, but 2,000 grams is, you know, that's
a little much.
You know, that's over almost 5 pounds.
So. Yeah. Well, that's a good rule of thumb for folks to know that.
Sounds like one of the fish stories that got exaggerated over time or something.
Yeah. Well, I was just going to say, though, that it sounds like that's a good rule of thumb that you just gave us, that you could expect about a gram per watt. That's a good goal.
Yeah. I think even as a goal, that's good. You know, gram per watt is a pumping grower, you know what I mean? So, and in that case, it would be, you know, 400, you said a 400 watt light and then an LED.
Yeah.
So, you know, you got your 400 grams. I mean, that's by no means a guarantee. Even a half a gram per watt is still pretty decent indoors, you know. It's kind of like something people aspire to.
Yeah.
I've seen people get more, but you really got to be a super cropper at that point.
Okay, let's move on to another question. This one comes from the Blues Guy and wants to know, how is hydrogen peroxide bad for marijuana? Isn't it just water with extra oxygen? Wouldn't that be a good thing?
Well, hydrogen peroxide has, when it's concentrated, it's, you know, it's like a poison. Not poison, but it will hurt the plant. But in small doses, people use it as a, you know, spray. They mist it on sometimes just to, But it's always diluted with water.
Yeah.
Sometimes people use it in their hydroponics reservoirs, but you know, it's just a little bit. I don't know. You know, I'm more on the organic side, so I don't know too much about hydrogen peroxide. I've never really used it in the growing process. I've heard about it. I've seen people, like I said, who've put it in their reservoirs, but I've never really utilized it myself, so I'm not really sure too much about it.
Okay. Let's go on. A question here from SneakerPimp420 wants to know, when grafting different strains to other plants, does the host plant suffer any kind of shock from the grafting, and does the host plant affect the flavor of the grafted bud?
Huh, that's interesting. You know, never seen cannabis grafted to another plant. I know there's been a lot of experimentation with that done, and, you know, people are constantly trying to do that because it's sort of like the, you know, apples and things like that, citrus fruits and stuff come from grafting. And, but I don't know. That's a tough one. I don't know too much about grafting, and I've never seen it at work with cannabis. And from the tests that I've read about, there's never been any sort of crossover as far as THC coming from a grafted plant when the plant wasn't a cannabis plant.
Okay. Got a grow question here from DoYou420. Wants to know, would a 12-hour drop of 20 degrees plus a 10% drop in humidity cause leaves to curl, brown, or crumble in just 12 hours? So a 12-hour drop of 20 drop temperature dropped by 20 degrees and 10% drop in humidity in just 12 hours, would that cause the leaves to brown, curl, and crumble?
It is something that will shock a plant. It seems to me like there may be some other problem as well that arose during those 12 hours, because it's not a huge drop in humidity, and, you know, temperature fluctuates outdoors all the time.
Sure.
With plants, so and temperature and humidity really, you know, they're constantly, you know, doing. It seems to me more like something was applied during that 12-hour period that may have caused that, because typically those problems like that tend to come on a little slower.
Okay.
You know?
Now, if he had this situation happen to him and he's in the fourth week of flowering, will those plants recover?
You know, it really depends on how he deals with the problem. I would, you know, first of all, raise the temperature and humidity, and then, you know, water the plants and just try to treat them, see if the new growth, if the new growth is still coming out green, then things are okay, then you can recover from it. If all the new shoots are dying, then, you know, at the fourth week of flowering, those plants are probably stunted to the level where you're not going to get too much out of them.
Yeah. Okay. Question now from...
it's basically about the new growth.
Okay.
If there's new growth that's healthy, then you may be able to recover. If the new growth is dead, then it's probably worth it just to scrap it and start over.
Okay. Question here from Flint. Wants to know, late season clones off of budding plants keep on blooming for each generation. Is there any way to stop that, and does it really matter?
It's a tough question. Late season clones from flowering plants. I get a lot of people asking me about cloning flowering plants because they didn't clone the plant when it was vegetating, so, and now they're realizing that they like it and they smelled it, and they're figuring out that they don't have a copy of it, so they want to take a clone of a flowering plant, and it's possible, and it can be done, and I've seen it done. It's definitely a pain. You know, you got to take the clone, and then you got to root it, and even after it's rooted, it's got to revert back to vegetative growth, and which means putting it, you know, under 18 hours or 20 hours of light. And basically vegetative shoots have to come out of a flowering bud, and it's a shock to the plant. It kind of, it's confusing, you know, to the plant. So it takes a month sometimes just to see any kind of progress. You'll see roots, but you won't see anything coming out of the bud, And then eventually, months, maybe a month and a half later, a shoot will come out, and it's, sometimes they look all crazy. Genetically, I don't know how sound they are, you know, but, you know, it can be done, and it's usually like a last resort when a strain is being lost, you know, then it makes sense to do it. But otherwise, you know, it might be just a good idea to, you know, get some clones from a reputable mother plant, or, you know, start some new seeds of your own. Sometimes you just got to give up on a on a certain line. I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, and the idea is it's a lot easier to take the clones earlier. I mean, when a plant is vegetating, not only can you take a clone, but you can then, that clone, you know, where you took that, that's going to create more branching at a time when the plant, you know, could use the pruning to become a bushier plant later in life. So I always recommend if people want to take a clone of a plant, take several clones of the plant during the vegetative stage, label them, and then if the plant grows out and it's wonderful and it's a strain you want to keep and it's something you want to put in your, you know, mother plant library, then you have perfect duplicates of it waiting that have never been stressed out. It just takes a little bit of thinking ahead.
Okay. Good ideas there. Question here from Dog 19124. Is there a way to tell if the plant is indica or sativa before harvesting time?
Well, the typical growth patterns of a sativa plant, there's much more distance between nodes, the places between the branches. They stretch a lot taller. The leaves are thinner. That's the typical sativa thing. The indicas are shorter and stockier. They have fatter leaves, less space between the internodes. So, you know, you can't tell when it's in seed form. I mean, you're basically trusting the breeder of the seeds or whoever you got them from at that point. But, you know, if they're called haze, then, you know, they're probably going to be on the sativa side. And if they're, you know, 40-day flowering or 45-day flowering plants, then they're probably on the indica side. And, you know, that they have pretty distinct growth characteristics. The thing about that, most of the plants we get are hybrids of the two. So, you know, there'll be 60% indica or 52% indica. So the differences will be a little smaller in a lot of ways. And a lot of growers just prefer growing indica dominant plants for, you know, obvious reasons, but. I think the connoisseurs really like the sativas, so if I could send a message to the growers, it would be, you know, take the time to grow out some sativas too, because there's definitely people out there that appreciate it.
Well, I will testify to that, Danny. Absolutely. More sativas, please.
Yeah, the older I get, you know, the more of a sativa lover I become as well. You know, the young whippersnappers out here, you know, they really like the stone
couch lock.
I gotta still accomplish all the tasks, you know.
Yeah, I got work to do. All right, let's get another question here from Apparatus Beats. Says, my local collective has a lot of new OG strains that I never heard of, like Ghost OG. What are the new 2009-2010 OG strains out there that you've heard of?
OG strains. I mean, I'm assuming he's referring to OG Kush.
Right.
And the thing about, you know, the thing about Kush and, you know, Diesel and a lot of these names is, you know, there's a lot of, you know, there's 10 Kushes being made up every day right now as we speak. So, you know, there's the OG Kush and there's the Larry Kush and the Russian Kush, and they're all, you know, pretty similar. And, you know, real Kush heads can sit down and tell you the difference. There's Bubba, Kush, and all these, you know, but a lot of it is really kind of the same sort of thing. And especially the OG, that's really just that one strain, the original Gangster Kush, which was, you know, the big thing in Cali, like, you know, for years now. You know, I believe in diversity too, though, because I want people growing more than just Kush. I mean, that's great to have that. And, you know, it gets top dollar in the dispensaries and stuff, and it's great. I mean, especially for medicinal patients, it's, you know, it's potent and wonderful. But I, you know, we should appreciate all the other flavors and varieties as well. And as far as new OG varieties, to get to the basis of the question, I don't know, you know, it's all Kush to me. You know, or it's haze, or it's this. There's really only, you know, probably 10 really distinct, you know, types of bud that are just out there in regular usage. And of course there's, you know, the rare grower who has something going, you know, that no one's ever seen, but typically for the, you know, the people out there in the world, there's really not that many different things. I mean, there's the differences are subtle, I would say.
Okay. Question.
You know, like wine varieties.
Right. Okay. A question here from Destruction. Is it good to provide some type of sugar for the plant to eat while it's flushing so that it won't stop growing during the flush?
Well, sugars are basically, you know, when you're adding carbohydrates in like the fifth week, and that's really important just for building up, you know, cellular structure and for the photosynthesis process. I mean, that's, you know, that's the basis of that process. And, you know, you should definitely be adding sugars. I don't know too much. I you know, as far as adding sugars during flushing, I'm sure it would help because the plant is taking up something besides just plain water, and it's not something that's going to build up the way that salts or metals would. So, you know, I think, yeah, it might not be a bad idea to add sugars towards the end. Typically, the people I know who use, you know, carbo loads or molasses or whatever, typically they do that around the fifth week of flowering. But I don't see any problems with doing it a little later.
Okay.
And during the flushing process. It's not something that's going to be taken up and stored in the same way as, you know, those ways that salts are.
Okay. Well, we're speaking with Danny Danko, who's High Times Senior Cultivation Editor. He joins us every fourth Friday of the month for our Cultivator's Corner. We take your questions right here in the chat room. We got time for one more question here, and this one comes from Puffin Polly. Wants to know, can I make a clone from a lowrider, then once summer comes, crossbreed it with a male plant that's not an auto-flowering plant?
Huh. You know what? The problem with cloning a lowrider is it's an auto-flowering strain, so there's really no way to keep it in the vegetative state.
Okay, so you never get the chance to do it.
Basically, the way I see it, it's kind of like you don't really clone those strains because you have a very limited amount of time after the third or fourth set of leaves. They're going to flower. No matter what you do, even under full, you know, 24-hour light, because of the ruralis genetics. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I mean, I guess that's how they do the breeding with them. You know, they do that, but you only have maybe a month-long window that you can use them, you know, in their vegetative state. So
right.
Maybe if you kept cloning every month.
Maybe so.
You know, just try to keep it short, but I, you know, auto-flowering strains are interesting. They're all the rage right now, especially over in Europe. There's even auto-flowering feminized seeds, and you know, it's a little daunting as well. You know, to think that, like, you know, there's going to be no male plants grown ever. You know, that we really need that infusion in the genetic gene pool every once in a while just to keep things, you know, feisty.
Yeah, I agree with that. And Danny, we got so many questions, but just not enough time to get them all in. Are you going to be hanging out in our chat room for a little while?
Yeah, I think I'll stick around in there for a minute and answer some people's questions and see how they felt about the Cultivator's Corner.
All right. Well, thank you, Danny Danko from High Times.
I
appreciate you joining us here for our Cultivator's Corner. We'll be back next week every Monday through Friday at 1 p.m. Pacific. Join us for Normal Show Live. Follow me on Twitter at Radical Russ. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers. Danny Danko remains in our chat room. You can chat him up there at live.normal.org. Get more answers to your questions in our chat room right now. For everyone here at Normal, I'm Radical Russ.
This is Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Like I said, we'll be back next week. Check out our blog at stash.normal.org. Send me an email at stash@normal.org. We'll see you next week.
You try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it. You try it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth.